You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. It's probably been a couple weeks since one of these has come out with Nationals. Happening a couple of weeks ago, and me trying to catch back up since I've been back. We picked up quite a few newer lifters to the team, so trying to get them up to speed and get everybody else starting to roll on their next blocks and stuff. I'll get into this a little bit too. We're gonna slightly change up the way that we've been doing things. Just, you know, it's been a growth process the entire time, so it's trying stuff out, seeing how it works, paying attention, updating it as we see fit, and we'll get into that. But first, I want to get into like a little Nationals recap. It's actually been a couple of weeks since we were at Nationals, so I've posted about it. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. I think we're at the point where it's time to move forward and start preparing for the next training year. But we had 8 people go to Nationals this year. It was actually a pretty high percentage of the lifters that qualified for Nationals with the group that went. There were a few that didn't, but it still made it for a pretty busy few days. Doug started things off on day one. He went 8 for 9, 10 kilo total PR. Had a little issue with the weight cut going in. He had to cut a little over 3 kilos overnight, which, you know, in a lot of cases that just turns into a really bad day. But that kid competed, man, and to come away with a 10 kilo PR when you feel fucking great at Nationals, when the judging's a little bit more strict, the stage is bigger, I think that's a win on a good day. And to be able to put that up on a day where you feel like shit, it's pretty impressive. Day two was Kerry. Kerry struggled to put together a good meet for about 2 years. I actually think Orlando Nationals was probably her best meet that she's had with me. There were other meets that were okay, they were good. They just, you know, she just didn't really string together her best lifts on a given day to put forth her best effort, I think. She ended up hitting the biggest total PR she's ever hit at a meet. It was 12.5 kilos. She totaled 355 at 52 kilograms body weight. It was a top 10 total. She lost out on a tiebreaker there and either finished like 10th or 11th. I'm not sure, but I think it was like 9 through 11. They had the same total as a body weight tiebreaker, but it doesn't matter. It's not like anybody's going to a world team in those two positions. But she hit her first deadlift PR on the platform in 2 years, or even in the gym. Like, she's hit 350 in the gym a few times, but usually with straps or just wasn't clean. There was a lot more confidence on that deadlift at the meet. And this is with a more conservative third squat too, so there's a little bit more there that we can get the next time out. After that was Vicky. So this was Vicky's first Nationals, and it cracks me up because, like, Vicky literally doesn't listen to music. She just does what she's told the whole time. And, like, I'll be like, Vicky, go sit over there. And she would literally just sit quietly. I'd let her know when she's, you know, 3 or 4 out. She'd get up, take her glasses off, put them in her pocket, grab her stuff, and just wait in line. Like, literally is almost... It was the easiest person I've ever handled in my life. And she went 9 for 9. She also hit, I think it was a 10 kilo total PR. And again, none of the lifts that she took were like, you know, eyes, nose, bleeding, RPE 10s. There was probably a little bit more on that total too. But for your first Nationals to come out, go 9 for 9, you know, bigger stage judging like that, that's pretty impressive. You know, handling the nerves. It was a lot of fun. Saturday was our busiest day. We had 4 lifters in the exact same session. So this required some help. So Ryan, who didn't compete at Nationals this year, he competed there last year, helped me out in the back. And like I really wanted him to help because emotionally you can't really get a read on him. He'll calm people down. And knowing the group that we had on Saturday, they get a little nervous when they're competing. And also, you know, help from, you know, Hartman and Cooper and Gleason. And it was a pretty chaotic day, but with enough friends, it turned out to be okay. So Sarah went first. So Sarah started with me. I literally, the day that she competed was like our friend's anniversary on Facebook. So she had started with me about a year to the day almost before. And Nationals at the beginning wasn't even on the radar. Like her total was just nowhere even near the qualifying totals. And this was before they went up. And then once they went up, it was like, well, you know, maybe 2020 she can qualify for Nationals. But I mean, she works her ass off, and at regionals she hit the qualifying total on the right on the head, that 380 kilos. She competes as a 72, but weighs about 66 kilos. Like, I'm not a big fan of cutting weight unless you have a chance to win a national championship, or, you know, if it puts going to nationals and that's your goal and stuff on the table, then we'll discuss it and stuff. But not a huge fan of cutting weight unless, you know, there's a higher competitive thing at stake. So she hit that qualifying total, and like, you know, you push so hard for a period of time that you expect something to kind of stall out. So had some conversations with her. I was like, listen, if you can just put your best total, you're on that platform at that competition, that's a win. You know, the stricter judging, the bigger stage and stuff. She you know, we matched her best squat, and it moved a lot better than it did at regionals. She kind of got a gift at regionals, getting two whites. From where I was standing, it looked high. But at nationals, she put it where she needed to be. It was a lot smoother, moved better, and it was probably a little bit more there. And I think it just gave her a lot of confidence because, you know, I mean, the nerves were still there, but she ends up hitting a meet PR on bench and then hits an all-time deadlift PR. The interesting thing, too, is like with Sarah, 2 weeks before the meet, we tend to take comp singles with our comp lifts. It just kind of gives me a gauge of where everything's at. you know, we're bringing it all kind of together. But I treated it as week one in a 3 week wave. So week one, you know, the max effort in the comp lifts there. Week two is our taper. So we'll touch each one, but let's say it's around an opener, a little bit less for deadlifts, maybe a little bit heavier for bench. And then into the meet, there's our week three. This is usually when, you know, we're peaking our max effort lifts. So her first week didn't go very well. She missed a squat, a bench, and a deadlift. And, you know, that can rattle your confidence a little bit. But, like, first week in, for me, it's not like, you know, at some point, strong is strong. And 2 weeks ago, if you could have hit those numbers, there's no reason to think it won't be there on the platform. But you just set it up appropriately. You know, you put the opener, the second attempt in there, and you know, the second attempt should kind of gauge where you're at and where you can move those third attempts. So, you know, in the meet, she hits a meet PR on the bench, very close to the best bench that she's hit in the gym. I think it was like 181. And then on the deadlift, so she hit a little bit under her previous best on a single and then made a jump in training and didn't get it. So we ended up putting a weight on there that she's never hit, and she ends up smoking it. And there was a little bit more there. So, you know, I think it's a good lesson for experience as a lifter too, to like when you haven't competed a lot, to understand that, you know, training is training, competing is competing. You know, we compete in the gym all the time. We're hitting heavier numbers. Like, things will be okay. Like, just because that week goes poorly doesn't mean your competition is going to go poorly. Second was Emily. So Emily is also a 72. Emily also had kind of a rough training year too, because, you know, she had started, her goal was to qualify for nationals. It was like the same thing. It's like, well, when she started, I think her best squat was like 235. And I was like, as a 72, and it's like, well, probably won't happen this year, but maybe next year. But same thing. Emily works her ass off. And I want to say, I think it was November, she qualified for nationals at a meetup there pretty easily. I think just getting the competition experience at that point was pretty important. But the old totals to qualify for nationals were so low. I think she ended up like qualifying by like 20 kilos. It wasn't even that much. And I knew that the qualifying totals were going up, but I figured 20 kilos would probably be a big enough cushion. She ended up needing 20 more kilos when they actually came out. It went up a lot more than I had anticipated. So we had to get right back after it. So she busted her ass to qualify in that November meet. And then after that, didn't really get any downtime. So then she's busted her ass again. And in April, she got the qualifying total by about 5 kilos. So I think after that, Emily just finally, like, there was just like this, almost like this deep breath, like, oh, like all that hard training is behind us. I need a little bit of a break. So she was kind of, training took a little bit of a backseat. She still came in and trained and stuff, but it moved from being a little bit more of a priority, and other life things became more of a priority, and nobody's getting paid to participate in this sport. And I think it's really important. Like, if you, especially if you want to have long-term success in this sport, you need to set yourself up outside of the gym to have a good support structure. If you hate your fucking job, you hate your relationships, you don't have friends, you don't really have a social life, and all you have is the gym, this sport will tear you up so fucking fast. Any sport will, but especially one that is so objective and so individually based, you're never going to last. So if there are situations that you need to improve upon outside of the gym, sometimes that has to take priority and your numbers have to go backwards in order to give yourself the support system to be able to sustain longevity and long-term success in this sport. I think this is an often underappreciated topic. I don't know how many world champions or long-term successful athletes come from situations where they hate everything around their lives except lifting weights. So she totaled much less at regionals, so didn't even hit the qualifying total at regionals. I want to say it was like 20 kilos less, but there were a couple miss lifts in there. And after that moment, you could just, like, Emily wanted to get back into it, wanted to have a good showing at nationals. And again, it was the same Emily as before, just busted her ass. She ends up, the week of her singles actually went really well. She smoked 315 on a squat. Her bench had dropped a lot when she had kind of taken that step back. So we had gotten it back up to very close to what she had hit in that April meet. And it was just on this like nice little upward trend, which is why I ended up making a decision at the meet for a third attempt. And then her deadlift, she hit a little 5 pound PR. I want to say she hit like 370 in the gym. So we get to the meet. She's very nervous. And the good thing about this group is they don't like hide their nerves. They don't try to, you know, they're very like, hey, I'm nervous, but I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do my thing and we'll see what happens. And it's funny because everybody on Saturday is like that. So it makes it entertaining. It's fun. So we go out there for squats. You know, the nerves make the weights feel a little heavier too. So she goes for a third attempt. Side spotter touched it a little soon. So we get the relift. And on the fourth attempt, she got it, but she cut it high. So three reds for depth, and rightfully so. So then we move on to bench. And her opener smokes her opener. Then she comes out and smokes her second attempt. And in my head, I'm like, at this time, and like, I know Emily worked hard, and she, our goal was just to match her best total from April. But it's like, man, the bench has been on an upward trend for weeks. Like, you just, you know, literally, like, almost in a linear fashion. Second moved extremely well. I put a weight on there that she hasn't hit since April. Because I'm like, if she hits this, there's a 100% chance she's going to walk away from this with a total PR. And I was like, I think there's a better chance than not of her hitting this third bench. But that could have been my emotions making that call a little bit. Her second squat matched her best in a competition. So even though she had missed her third, that would have been a PR. So we were in a really good spot to just, even if, you know, if I was conservative to match the total and play the goals, but I saw an opportunity, put it on the bar. She didn't get it. So we're going into deadlifts where she's 4 for 6, I guess technically 4 for 7 because she got the relift on the squat. So she's 4 for 6, so, you know, the nerves are still there. It's like, you know, this can go one of two ways. You know, you either finish strong or, you know, you end on a, you know, you go 6 for 9. That's kind of a shitty day. It's not the worst, not the best, but she goes out there, hits her opener, and then hits her second and moved really well. And, you know, this time around, I think one of my strengths as a coach is my ability to make calls on third attempts. At the end of nationals with 8 lifters, we completed a little over 90% of our attempt selections, which is an extremely high made percentage. So I, like, literally when it happened, I was like, it's there. The platforms that we pull on in the gym too have a little bit of give, so I tend to see like 2.5 to 5 kilos more in a deadlift for most of the lifters once we go to a competition. And I knew, here is an opportunity for her to, it's going to be a really fucking hard deadlift, but for her to be able to walk away with an all-time deadlift PR, 7 for 9, which is a much better day, and it'll match her best total. So she goes out there. I told her beforehand, I was like, listen, Emily, it's going to be fast to your knees, and then it's going to hit the fucking brakes, but just stick with it. Trust you can lock it out. It'll be fine. And she went out there and literally, like, it was a good, hard deadlift, all-time PR, 7 for 9, left with smiles, matched her total, her best total. So everything worked out really, really well with that. It was a good ending to what could have been a much different day. Then we had Jess. So Jess was actually, the last like month of training was pretty rough because she had some hip thing going on. So it was just a lot of like shuffling things around, finding what we could do, being smart later in the weeks, because we kept the max effort stuff in the beginning of the week, and then like really pulled back hard later in the week. So we're not able to touch as heavy of weights as we're typically touching. The volume at the end of the week is dropping big time. So it was just, we're in a tough situation. And just like Sarah, her week when we did the singles did not go well. Except for bench. Bench went pretty well, but deadlifts didn't go well. Squats didn't go well. Our goal going in was just to get that SBD Pro American qualifier for the Arnold, over 700 IPF points. Go 9 for 9. And even being conservative, because she went, so she won the 72s at regionals, and she went 8 for 9. She missed her third squat, so her second was like 352. So even if we were a little conservative and just matched our best competition squat, it put her in a position to have a total PR, being really conservative with the deadlift, because she hadn't touched anything. I think the most she had deadlifted was 385. And her best gym deadlift is 405, so it was quite under. And I think, you know, what you're seeing is with the hip thing, right? Sometimes these things are just a sign of fatigue, right? So she goes, she squats. Squats are going okay. Hip flares up. Deadlift suffers later in the week. So we, you know, we were trying to, like, figure out all that stuff. So we go out there. We played a little conservative with the squat. She smokes 363. As her third attempt, just for that qualifier, just like once she hit that, it almost guaranteed her an Arnold spot. You know, if we had gone 369 or 374 and missed, even if it's depth, right? Like so the way that Jess squats, she kind of drives the knees forward hard. And as the weight gets heavier, that depth starts to creep up a little bit. So sometimes it's not even so much of I don't want to put that weight on the bar because I think she'll miss it. I 100% think she'll stand up with it. It's a matter of the judging was very strict. The head judge on that, on the platform that she was on, was throwing a lot of reds out there for depth. And actually on the 363, Jess got two whites from the sides and a red from the front. So all it takes is it being close and you get one side judge that throws that red and you're missing a lift. So we played a little safe there. Then bench came around. Her bench had really like clicked. So everything's moving well. Conservative meat PR, I think 2.5 kilos. Threw that on the bar. She smoked it. Moving on to deadlifts. So deadlifts is where we just really didn't know what was going to be there. But she needed, based off of her body weight, 391 as a third deadlift to have over 700 IPF points. So I was pretty confident that that would be there. She hits her opener. I mean, smokes it. Smokes her second attempt. And then her third attempt rolls around. And I see the head judge start to move. And so we had put the 391 on there just to secure it. And that 391 is actually a 2.5 kilo total PR. So literally, it'll cap off a 9 for 9 day, a total PR, an Arnold spot. Like, being conservative and doing all three of those things. I mean, the 9 for 9 being conservative is not that difficult. But to do the other two things, it's pretty cool. And, like, and I told her, I'm like, we'll send it at the Arnold. I see the head judge fidget on her third deadlift and starts to stand up, and I look at the bar and I notice there's an extra 2.5 kilo plate on the side that I'm standing on. I wasn't sure if there's one on the other side too. So in my head, I'm like doing quick math. I'm like, all right, at worst, this is either 396 or 402 on the bar right now. And like in my head, I'm like, the way things are going, she seems to be confident. She's attacking the weights. I felt it was better to just keep my mouth shut, let her get the lift. You know, we'll take credit for the 391 and just move on as if nothing had happened. I thought it was better than trying to interrupt her and then having her get back underneath that bar. And if she misses, she would have got a relift anyways. And I think coming back to hit something lighter would have been easier as opposed to them, you know, taking off the 2.5 and her getting right back underneath that bar. So she smokes it. It ends up being 396, but absolutely like crushed it. So like the cool thing at the end of the day, even though it's a 2.5 kilo total PR, we know it was more than that. And where her deadlift had like really suffered in training for the last like 3 or 4 weeks, to be able to come out and smoke 2.5 kilos behind her best ever competition pull, which happened 3 months ago, I think was a really good confidence boost going into the next training cycle. So, you know, that little bit extra weight being on that bar, I think was just a good positive thing to move forward. And walking out there, walking out of there knowing that you had more on your squat, on your bench, and on your deadlift, like, and going 9 for 9, hitting a total PR, hitting those qualifiers, like, I think that's, you can't have a better day than that. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. And then the last one on Saturday was Alyssa. So this was Alyssa's second nationals. And Alyssa's just consistent. She very, very rarely ever misses training days. And this even includes the last month of her prep for this competition. She was traveling to all different places, never missed a training day, still got it all in. It gets tough to gauge, though, because it's like with the travel and stuff, you never know how much that is actually affecting performance or where strength numbers actually are and stuff. So we came up with a plan to basically chip a squat, chip a bench, and her deadlift test went extremely well. So I think she hit like a 10-pound PR. So at regional, she hit an all-time deadlift PR of like 375 and hit like 385 in the gym, so 10 pounds. So we're going to try to PR all three. Basically, chip the squat, chip the bench, 5 kilo deadlift PR. She chips the squat, went well. And so depth was an issue for Alyssa last year. But this time around, like, came out, buried her squats, put it where it needed to be. No questions, good hard third squat. Moving on to bench. I didn't care how bench was going. I'm I'm putting that number on that bar. So Alyssa's problem on the bench, it's not a strength issue. It's a technique issue. And I think she gets a little freaked out when she feels the weight in her hands. So what you'll see is she'll bring it down. And then as she brings it down to her chest, you'll start to see her arch flatten out and her elbows kind of start to spin out. But if she can stay tight, it's a weight she'll smoke. But if that starts to happen, it's too heavy. It's just going to be a lot more unforgiving. And as you get stronger as a lifter, your technique needs to be on point under those. You're just not going to move heavier weights with shitty technique. So she missed her third bench for those reasons. And she knows better. And then deadlifts. She ends up smoking her third deadlift, which is a 5 kilo PR. I probably could have put a little bit more on that bar knowing, you know, she pulled that 385 on a platform. We tend to get a little bit more competitions when we go, but that capped off a 5 kilo total PR day, going 8 for 9 at nationals when you were traveling for the month before it. Again, you probably, that day couldn't have gone any better. So we're going into Sunday. So 7 people have competed up until this point. If I made a better call on Emily's third bench, all 7 lifters would have hit total PRs at this point. And, you know, we're hitting a very high percentage of our lifts. So, I mean, things are going great. And then Dave competed Sunday morning. Squats, 9 white lights, 5 kilo. Squat PR, 678, moved well, probably a little bit more there. A good hard third, though. Bench is kind of like hit or miss with Dave. But he ended up, so last year, I think his best bench was like 297 at Nationals or something, and he missed his third. Where this year, he hit 330 with a good hard third on his bench. So it has gotten better in the long term. He did gain some weight, which helps and stuff, but that's still a nice big jump, handling the heavier weights, consistent with the heavier weights. We had planned a little bit heavier, but it just wasn't there. And he's similar to Alyssa too, where the elbows kind of spin out. So like, we'll just keep hammering those triceps and go from there. So Dave going into deadlifts is 6 for 6, not even a single red light flash. Like, he's having as good of a day as you can possibly have at a competition. Smokes his opener, smokes his second attempt. And in my head, I'm like, we're 8 for 8, not a single fucking red light the entire time. I was like, if there's a time to send a third deadlift, this is it. I could have played it a little bit more conservative and locked in a total PR for him because, you know, subtotal was 5 kilos better than his best subtotal. So we're going into deadlifts, even, you know, slightly under his best is going to yield that total PR. So, but, you know, I mean, 8 for 8, all whites. A weight that he hitched in the gym I put on the bar. So he trains by himself in his garage. So, you know, with all the people there and stuff, I was like, fuck it. So we jumped 17 and a half kilos on his third, and he gets it within an eyelash from lockout. It just falls out of his hands. You know, so I think it was the right call for the third. You know, just nothing's 100% guaranteed. It just didn't happen, you know. So Dave ended up 8 for 9, totaling a little bit under his best total. But, you know, I mean, if he had hit that, it would have been a 10 kilo total PR. So, you know, we could have taken the easy way out and just, you know, taken what was there that day to say we hit a total PR. But where's the fun in that? So all in all, you know, I don't think Nationals could have gone any better. Like, realistically, I mean, of course, all 8 people could have gone 9 for 9 and hit total PRs and all of that stuff. But, you know, that's unrealistic. So, you know, realistically speaking, being an eyelash from lockout and one bad bench call away from having a perfect week is probably as good as it gets. So I was pretty happy with that. So some of the things we're going to start changing moving forward in the program. So we've been running a more like conjugate style system. It's not really like how Westside does it. We have kind of our own way of doing things. As I don't, you know, lifters at Westside, most of them don't have jobs. This is as far as I understand, right? Like, training is their job. They're multiply, so the absolute loads that they're handling are a lot more. Most of them are bigger. So, you know, we need to adapt those. You know, you kind of take things from everybody and mash it together to what works best for you and your lifters and each individual and whatnot. So, you know, we were taking some stuff from there, taking some stuff from what we've done in the past and kind of, you know, blending it together. So we were, our structure was, and it always has been, similar as it was when I worked with Chico, was squat and bench day one, deadlift bench day two, squat bench day three, maybe deadlift day four. But we did cut down the amount of frequency of bench, I mean of deadlifts and bench, quite a bit. Most were only deadlifting one day a week. And some were already on the structure that we're going to be using after Nationals, just out of, they just couldn't recover. So I really like the heavy singles, and I like the heavy singles for a number of reasons. One often aspect of competing that is I never hear discussed is a coach's ability to make calls on the platform. That's what third attempts are. I understand you have your sheets and, you know, there's, I've helped people out at meets and there's a A option, a B option, a C option, and they're fucking broken up by like 2.5 kilos. Like, awesome, your Excel spreadsheet can come up with this fancy fucking meet plan. But at the end of the day, it's the coach knowing his lifter, knowing what the lifter is capable of, what the lifts look like, and being able to make a call. So what I really like about singles is I got a lot of practice going into Nationals making attempt selections. It's what I do every night in the gym. And I think this wholeheartedly was training for me to be able to have an attempt selection percentage as high as 90%. It was like 90.5%. We were 65 of 72. And I literally think I made one bad call, and that was that bench for Emily. Like, I know Dave misses third deadlift. I don't regret that call. That was the right weight to put on the bar. It was close, and that's, you know, I think more often than not, those lifts go in our favor. So I really like singles for that aspect of training. Like, when we go to compete, I am the one watching them lift and putting that single on that paper. So I think that's a often misunderstood portion of this style of training, and probably something that other coaches and lifters could do better if they actually practiced it. So I'm not taking out singles. Also, that is our fucking sport. Straining on a heavy triple, 4 or 5 reps is not the same as straining on a heavy single. Absolute loads on a heavy single have more of a psychological effect than they do on submaximal sets. So if you're maxing out a double or a triple, it's still submaximal. It's less than your one rep max. So that psychological piece to it, handling those heavier weights, me making calls. There's a skill of handling heavy singles, and it's the skill of this sport that is this sport. So we will continue to do singles because it is this sport. With that said, you know, yeah, rate of force development, I do think is still important, and getting a certain amount of practice, that rep work is still important. So doing singles obviously cuts a lot of that stuff down. So, you know, Westside uses their dynamic effort days, which we do also. But we use heavier bar weight, more straight weight than we do with like boxes and bands and chains and stuff. I use a lot of the Chico special exercises. So the exercises that I learned from him to fix certain technical aspects of the lift. There too, it's just, you know, practicing that technique. That's kind of what I view those days as. And they shouldn't be so rough that they just inhibit your recovery to be able to come back day one and crush a max effort squat. So moving forward, we're spacing some things out. So we ran into some problems with the deadlift. We were just getting a little bit more dinged up training as hard as what we were. And like the crazy thing is like the little like nagging crap didn't start like really piling up for months. And, you know, I train a lot of beginner to intermediates. And I mean, I get that, like, you know, at Nationals, 4 out of the 8 finish in the top 25. Kerry had a top. D- Dave was in the top 20. And, you know, so as a group, we're pretty strong. But there's still beginner to intermediates. So what I'm... Oh. So I think if we had more advanced lifters, they maybe these little nagging things would have piled up a little bit sooner than what they did. But they didn't. So I think we have to be... So basically what it ended up happening for me is... I was being more reactive than I was proactive. So things would come up. So I'd set up the program. I'd written it as if we lived in the perfect world. And the perfect world is one in which fatigue doesn't exist. We just rest all the time. We can train hard, whatever. And it was up to the lifter, based off of the rules that I gave them, to be able to make these adjustments to the training program and to take lighter days. You know, you come in, you feel like shit. This should be a lighter day, right? Cut the intensity, cut the volume, like there were all these rules. None of them did that. They would come in and still push it regardless, which is an awesome attitude to have, and I would much rather my lifters have that attitude. It's much easier to slow somebody down than it is to speed them up. So like all these little nagging things were starting to happen. So moving forward, we'll do our max effort squats on day one, maybe some back off rep work. And that back off rep work is going to be light. So, you know, I know most won't do a heavy single, and then like, and like when I'm talking heavy, I'm talking like we're getting near maximal on these singles. This is a max effort single. You know, like back off work is kind of like taboo at this point. But for me, I think there's more of a benefit to having them. And like, I'm not taking a 10% drop. You know, we're dropping 30% off that max effort weight to do some doubles or triples. You know, I might add a pause. I might add some other like technical thing to work on, but we're making a significant drop in weight. And to me, this is going to have more of a carryover, than if I just hit some bodybuilding stuff at this point. And for this too, like there's something about hitting a max effort squat. Don't get me wrong. The fatigue of that is going to make those down sets feel like shit regardless. They're going to feel a lot heavier than what they really are. But there's also, it's training your mental focus, right? To hit that heavy single, whether it went good or bad, you got to get right back underneath that weight and you got to be able to make some adjustments and be able to continue to train. So there's a dealing of the emotional component of the sport put into that, that, you know, if you've listened to this podcast in the past or you read my articles and stuff, I'm a huge proponent of that part of it. And that's what I really like about that back off work. And I'll make it lighter if I have to. And like, you know, one of the things that I really learned from working with Shaco for so long was being able to take a very low intensity, make it a little bit harder, and actually get a good training stimulus out of it. We did that for years before we started doing heavier stuff. So I was able to hone in on some skills as a coach with those lighter weights to work on technical inefficiencies, but ways to make those lighter weights heavier so you're actually getting the training effect that you're looking for. So we can manipulate that as we see fit. Day two is just bench. So we'll do a max effort bench. More often than not, there will be back down work here because you can just recover from bench a lot easier. Now, the good thing about this day is, again, I don't think accessories are a huge deal. I think they're nice to do if you have the time to do them. But I have a bunch of lifters who work full-time jobs, have lives outside of the gym, and have very limited time to be in the gym. And what I noticed, if I plan accessories out for them, they rush through everything else because they want to do everything that's on that sheet of paper. The accessories are not going to have carryover to the main lifts. I don't give a shit. And the argument for injury and how they're preventative of injury and all of this stuff too, I'm not sure I'd buy into that piece of it either. I think exploring different movement options is extremely important, right? Like if you get stuck in the same positions over and over again, those overuse things are going to pop up. Now, I do think you know, if somebody's banged up and we need to cut the volume of the main lifts, I think the accessories are extremely important in those scenarios there, right? If somebody can't squat because they have knee pain, right, we're doing good mornings. All right, well, let's hit some TKEs, some seated calf raises, some other things that, you know, are going to, one, help them recover, you know, strengthen the area that's feeling a little dinged up, but also so that, like, those muscles are still being worked. I do think that that is important in those scenarios. You know, and again, it's just you're doing a lot of pressing. Yeah, you should probably have some pulling too. But, you know, deadlifts and squats work the back, you know, a fucking shit ton. So I do think you get enough of that stuff. But you better be careful, because if you're not changing angles of those lifts enough, you can get overuse. You know, just moving your feet out an inch or two on the squat, yeah, it may help. But the angles are going to be very, very similar. So, you know, making sure you change the stimulus enough that really changes the angle. So I'm being a lot more firm with when we do wide stance, it's not your wide stance, where I tell you to go put on flats so that you can't drive the knees forward. You got to sit the hips back. It's going to force those angle changes a lot more, because we have to be careful, because sometimes we don't have time to do these accessories. But what I like about this day two bench is it's pretty quick. And the way that we structure accessories is they fill in the blanks. So now you have a day where you spent very little time in the gym. If you have shit to do, right? Like, recovery is another piece that's often, I think, misunderstood, especially where the majority of the information out there for powerlifting is there for people who are like professional powerlifters. They don't have real lives outside of the gym. So if you're handling, you know, if you're coaching lifters, or you are a lifter that has a lot going on outside of the gym, spending an extra half hour in the gym and then running around the rest of your daily life to try to catch up and make up for lost time can hinder recovery. So if you're done with bench, everything feels good. You don't, you know, there's, you know, and I understand the argument that, like, oh, well, accessories work weaker muscle groups. Well, I'm going to put them in positions to work weaker muscle groups within the lifts themselves, so that the loads, the angles, it's going to be much more specific to what they're doing. You know, band pull-aparts aren't going to help you bench more. They might help, you know, the argument to stay healthy and stuff, maybe. I don't know how much I buy into that either, but what I do buy into is it's, you know, if you're doing a lot of pressing, it's changing the angles, you're exploring different movements. I do think that is important. And what I also like about the accessories is I kind of give them freedom to pick things so they can do what they want. And I think there's a little bit more buy-in that can be had there. So I don't really think it's building up weak places, but it can't hurt to do, right? In most scenarios. But I'm going to tell you, like, with some of my lifters, they're doing a shitload of accessories, and the ones doing a shitload of accessories are the ones suffering from overuse stuff. Forearm pain, elbow pain, knee pain. And, like, you look at their sheets and they're just doing a lot of accessories. You can't do bodybuilding and powerlifting. So I'm much more on the, you know, accessories are kind of like, if you have enough time to do them, do them. But if they're going to hinder your ability to recover by decreasing the time you have outside of the gym to do things, or, you know, just holding on to dumbbells for an extra half an hour sometimes can bang up your forearms quite a bit, and your elbows and stuff. So, like, unless there is a glaring issue, and on weeks in which we kind of, like, taper down the volume and stuff, again, there's more space to fill in the blanks. You can start adding in more of that stuff then. But that bench day gives people the option to do that. Typically, I like them to space out now squats and deadlifts by 72 hours. So day three, we'll do some, like, dynamic effort or rep bench work, and then we'll follow that up with some max effort deadlifts. I'm going to rotate the deadlifts a lot more than I did before. So again, like, I had these rules in place for the lifters to follow. They just didn't. They were just max out every time they're in the gym anyways. So week one, they'll do their max effort deadlift. Week two will either be dynamic effort deadlifts or rep work. Week three, we'll max effort deadlift again. Week four, they might max effort deadlift again because we'll change the exercise. But if the exercise isn't going to change that much, if it's just going to be a very, very small change to it, again, we will do dynamic effort or rep work there, and then we'll get back into. So it's either going to be every other or every third week, depending on where the lifter falls. Now, day four, we're going to do dynamic effort or rep squat work, followed by dynamic effort or rep deadlift work. Now, the deadlifts on this day will be extremely light. So Shaco, when I worked with him, my day four, once or twice a month, would be an extremely light deadlift technique day. So it would be kind of similar to that to some extent. Every other week, though. So some people won't even get deadlifts here, but if they do get deadlifts there, they'll do their max effort deadlifts on day three, and then they'll have some type of rep or dynamic effort deadlift work, very light, on day four. Now, I do think there are some benefits when you're sore and tired to moving around a little bit. Again, the accumulated fatigue of those days can make lighter weights feel heavier. So you can get an increased training effect from very light loads without like necessarily having increased risk. You get the focus on technique. Saves them psychologically a little bit from dealing with heavy weights all the time, and you get some conditioning work, especially with squats first. On the weeks that they do not do max effort deadlifts, that rep work or that dynamic effort work will not be there on day four. So now this forces once every 2 weeks. So like I said, with Shaco, one to two times a month, I would have a very light day four. So now this, when that deadlift moves up, it's just squats. And yeah, the volume of the squats might be higher or lower depending on where the lifter is, what they need, and all of that stuff. But it's going to be a lower volume day than what they're used to, I suppose, on a day four. And it's quick. Like your top sets, once you get into the working weight warm up and stuff, 30, 35 minutes it should take you to do the entire squat session. So again, here are fill in the blank spaces. If you have more time, you know, I'll suggest some muscle groups for each lifter to work on, and I'll put them in these places. So again, accessories can fill in the blanks, and I'm putting blank spaces in there for the lifters to be able to do this. And again, it's up to them. If they have very busy lives, I don't give a shit about their face pulls. Like, if face pulls and abs and bicep curls are gonna increase your time in the gym by 15, 20 minutes, and then, you know, you're gonna be rushing around somewhere else. If you feel like going home and resting and that is a better option, sometimes it is a better option. Do that. But they're gonna have those options. And, you know, I do think it's good to be in different positions than what people are typically in, but we're doing that anyways. We're changing footwear, we're changing grip width, we're changing stance width, we're using deficits, bands, chains, boxes, pins. We use a lot of variation. We use a lot of variation to change angles of the main lifts quite a bit. And you'll be surprised, you know, you get your feet wider in flats with a box. It is very different from your comp squat, the angles and stuff too. And also, you know, with the max effort stuff, I have options. I can use a squat that's more of a builder so that they will use lower loads. And at the same time, I can use a deadlift that's more of a tester that actually will have them using loads near maximal, if not even a little bit more than their 100% of 1RM. And then I can go vice versa. I can use a tester on squats and a builder on deadlift. There's ways I can manage loads to keep each lifter healthy and happy, and well, happy, maybe not. Because I'll tell you, the way that we train, it's frustrating. You're going to do a lot of things that you don't like to do, but you're going to do them because they're going to make you better. And they're going to allow you to train long term. And at the end of the day, we spend a fraction of the time in the gym now compared to what we did when we were running a more like Shaco-based, higher volume, sub-max type of program. And I think it's extremely important to be as efficient as humanly possible in the gym because the lifters do have these other obligations outside of it. That's all I want to talk about for now. I have to get to the gym anyway, so follow along on Instagram. It's KW Can, our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.